You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. It is the 15th of October, 2024. Really appreciate you. +27734703520. That is +27734703520. That's the number that you can use to talk to us and let us in on some of the thoughts and discussions that we've been having on the show today. And since it is a Tuesday, we are always interested in what's happening in the technological space in terms of some of the trends that are taking place, as well as some of the things that are happening in different industries, particularly looking at how technology is affecting some of these sectors, some of these trends, and all those sort of stuff that's happening. Today, we're talking about genetically modified food and world hunger. Look, I think we can end the show here, because that's a really important topic, right? We can have all other important topics, but when we speak world hunger and food security or insecurity, I think the world needs to stop, because those are really important conversations. World hunger and food insecurity is a recurring problem in most parts of the developing world. Among the many potential biotechnologies that are available and the different ways in which they can be applied, genetic modification of food demands particular attention, and who better to help us understand this than Dr. Mini Khoza, who's joining us this evening to help us understand these things a little bit better. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
I'm great, thanks.
Fantastic.
Good evening to also the listeners at
yes.
home.
Yes. Oh, that's okay. Definitely. Thank you for your time once again. We really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Are you feeling any type of fatigue?
No, of course, it's December fatigue.
Yeah, yeah.
Capturing marks in the university, preparing for exams and all of those. So there is that fatigue, you know, but it comes with the job.
Ah.
We said we were dedicated during the interviews, so we have to show up now.
but you are not used to these things. You can't be fatigued. I mean, at doctorate level, I'm sure there was even more, you know, work to do and fatigue. You're used to these things. What would be some of your advice to students at this time when they are feeling a little bit tired?
I think with students, obviously, it's all about time management.
Yeah,
you need
to
prioritize your things. I always like saying to my students at this time of the year, Mjolo aside.
Mjolo aside, right?
Priorities have to be straight, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the time of the year. It's all about preparing on time. So maybe having a schedule. This is when I study. This is where I go to church or do recreational activity.
Yeah.
And this is where I sleep. And sleep is very important. I think there's this notion among students that if you don't sleep X amount of hours, then it means now you're the toughest and the strongest. And the thing is, if you don't take care of your body one day, it's just going to shut off. And it then becomes pointless. So I do preach that good sleep, have enough sleep where possible, especially before going to write a test or an exam, because you can study the whole night and then the next thing you have a mind block and only remember the answers after the test. Then what was the point?
And there's always this thing of overnight studying, right? That I think a lot of us used to do back in the days when we were still at school. And I think with the advent of COVID and COVID kind of putting to the forefront issues of mental health, this thing is really detrimental, because I remember having fog myself in some of my exams, and we were I don't know whether it was brainwashing, but at the time there was always, I must stay up all night to go and write the exam. But we never realized that it's actually bad for us and bad for our health. And so COVID kind of brought it and said, no, but that's not good for your health.
No, that's very true. I think all of us went through that.
Yeah.
Even now, some students are still going through that. It's just a matter of identifying which study patterns work for you. Because some people are good at studying in environments that are noisy. And some people can actually cross night and then still function in the exam room, the test. Then some of us, we just want to fall asleep once we are writing because our bodies are not used to that, you know.
Yeah, all right. For our listeners who are joining us for the first time, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and really where your interests lie in the work that you do?
Okay. So I am Mina Ntle Khoza. I lecture at the University of Johannesburg at the Department of Biotechnology and Food Technology.
Yeah.
I'm also a deputy director for the Center for Innovative Food Research, which is also at UJ. So my research is mainly on agricultural products, so the development of food products from your agricultural products that we are inherent to us as Africans, so your African plants and so on.
Yeah,
that's what my interest is, and of course food security as well.
Food security,
trying
as well.
To develop food that people can then consume, and it must be safe. There is also an element of legislation within my research, so you know the regulations around food, and I also coordinate work integrated learning at UJ, so ensuring the employability of our students.
Fantastic. Really, really love that. Okay, talking about food security then, let's start here, Doc. Genetically modified foods. Some of us who don't know anything about this, we all say, it's got GMO, I don't eat this thing. But none of us really know what this GMO is. What are these GMOs, genetically modified foods and all those sort of stuff?
Okay, I'll try to explain it in a layman's sense.
Yes.
So that even Ugogo at home can really understand what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it's basically us using genetic engineering. So altering the DNA of either a plant or an animal, right, for us to obtain what we want from a food point of view.
Yeah.
So it could be, for example, a scientist could use what we call gene insertion, where we put in a new gene in a specific plant so that the plant can then be modified. Maybe it can have more nutrients within it, or it can sustain certain harsh weather or environmental conditions, or it can be resistant to pests. So those are your GMOs. But I know that with GMOs, there's always dialogues and debates, like you were saying, people saying I don't eat genetically modified foods, and then other people are for them. But I think the minute you understand what they are about, it's not like we are playing God or anything. It's just so that we are able to get food that is sustainable for us. I mean, if you look at things way back in the day where there was no genetically modified organisms, it means you would have to then, if you wanted oranges, you would have to wait for the winter season only for you to eat the oranges. Once that's done, that's done. You have to wait X amount of hours for you to then consume that. But now with these genetically modified organisms, then you can have fruits that would last longer. Maybe if the shelf life of a banana was 1 day, now it can be, let's say, 6 days.
Yeah.
It's all about that. And also the nutritional content of the food.
Yeah.
So if you think about it like that, there's really nothing bad about it. Or if you even think of, let's say, something like an avocado, there can be somebody who maybe genetically modifies it to remove that enzyme that causes the enzymatic browning. You know how when you slice an avocado, it then turns brown, which is something that we don't like, right?
Yeah.
So the minute it becomes like that, you're questioning yourself. It's not rotten, by the way. But you are now questioning yourself, should I eat this? It doesn't look appealing to the eye. So genetically modification can then get in, even in that instance, to help us maybe have a green avo even 5 hours after slicing it in an environment that has air.
Okay. So there seems to be a business case. Again, now I'm a classical finance, economics, you know, person. So I will always refer to say, what's the business case for this thing? Because if I can't find the business case, I always struggle with whatever we come up with. And so I'll say, from what you're saying, it sounds like there's a business case for it, because it's making things more sustainable. It's giving them a bit more shelf life, you know. We are able to, I suppose, from one, make it to be 3, 4, 5, you know, those type of things, which for me makes business sense. And for people who may not necessarily be that inclined or not in your type of I suppose, framework of thinking and all that. And I'm talking now about your so-called environmentalists who would say, no, but that sounds very wrong. What's the debate like and how does it advance, I suppose, from there?
So I think from the environmentalists, probably they are also divided, right, yeah, amongst themselves.
Yeah.
Because if, let's take plants, for example,
yeah,
I will come with the argument that genetically modified organisms are good if you maybe want to have plants that are pest resistant.
Yeah.
And I think even from, if you're an environmentalist, I mean, yes, we can talk about the ecosystem and whatsoever, yeah, but at the end of the day, if now people have to eat,
yeah,
and pests are eating the crops that we are supposed to make produce out, yeah, of that, then I think that kills the,
yeah,
the environment of maybe saying the ecosystem, this and that.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
That's always my argument, because maybe at the end of the day, as much as there has to be an ecosystem and biodiversity within the plants, the animals and whatsoever,
yeah,
but at the end of the day, we also still need the crops. That's why also it has to be also done in a monitored way. So it doesn't mean that now because we can modify organisms or food products, then now we should abuse that. Hence, there's even a legislation aspect of it.
Yeah.
So, for example, in South Africa, there was an act called, or it's still there, even you can even access it on the internet. So it's Act 15 of 1997, right, which gives regulations around the limits, how much genetically modified organisms should be there in food products and so on, or how much you can modify a food product so that things are done in a correct way. And then there is an amendment of that legislation, which is Act 23 of 2006. So remember when you started, you said there's this argument that people will say, I don't eat genetically modified organisms, but I think most of us have consumed them.
Yeah.
Maybe without even being aware. And probably the things that we complain about, just like, these things rot very fast. I wish this could last longer.
Yeah.
You are longing for a genetically modified food. It's just that if it's not explained properly, then you are just thinking of your own scary concept of those. But I think if everything is done, obviously, in moderation, then it can be good. And obviously, if it's not done in moderation, maybe there could be other consequences. For example, if I'm talking about Act 15 of 1997, that's over maybe over 20 years ago, we can say that maybe we don't know what the health implications would be for us consuming genetically modified organisms in 50 years, because we haven't been there for 50, we haven't used them for, let's say, that amount of time.
Yeah.
So that's where maybe the argument could come from. And then, like I said, there could be, like you were saying, people from the environmental perspective, right?
Yeah.
About the loss of biodiversity and all of that, which is why everything has to be done in a balanced way. And consumers have to be informed as well. So the legislation would also then specify that if there's more than 5% GMOs in a food product, then the label should state that, so that the consumer is able to make an informed decision. Whether it's from a religious point of view, maybe in your religion you're not supposed to consume that, or from health point of view, or from your own beliefs point of view, then you get to make your own decision, an informed decision, to say, you know what, I'm not going to be consuming this product. But I always feel like maybe the health point of view or informed decision would only be more relevant when you are buying your own food and preparing it from a store. Because if you're at a restaurant, who's going to tell you that the cucumber and the salad is actually genetically modified or not? Hence, I'm saying maybe some of us have consumed this product, but we are speaking against them.
I love that. I love that. Okay. Now, I'm going to digress a little bit because I want to juxtapose this thing. So the opposite of genetically modified food is what, Doc?
So it will just be your natural organisms, right?
Natural organisms. Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
That's it. is. So maybe if it's an apple, yeah. we'll just call it an apple. And yeah. then if it's genetically modified, it will be a genetically modified apple.
Ah, okay. And then you mentioned something around when the process of GMO is changing or altering the DNA of that particular food apple, for example, in this instance, right? So when you are altering that, are you creating a same thing that looks like the organic one, or how does it work?
So it will still be the same thing.
Yeah.
It will look like that. So what would happen before we do anything with food products? I mean, this involves people's lives.
Yeah. Right?
It's something that we are going to consume. There's a yeah. lot of research that will get into this. First, we need to identify which part of the genes within this apple are causing it to brown
yeah.
when we cut it, if that's the issue we are trying to solve.
Yeah.
When we solve that, we will do some mini trial in the lab to mimic what would maybe happen if somebody was to consume that, right? What yeah. would happen in their tummy? Do some research. From there, we then involve animals. It could be pigs or rats. You do research, and then you do research on human beings before yeah. these things go out to the market. So yeah. by the time it gets to the market, it's really, it's safe for you to consume. Nobody is trying to kill anyone. We are not about yeah. that mission. We are food technologists. We
Definitely.
Want to be alive so that you can buy food.
Definitely.
And we have a sustainable ecosystem. You know?
Ah,
so if you can go to Willys or ShopRite yeah. or whichever retailer that you like, and maybe there's a GMO apple and there's one that is not genetically modified, most of the time you will see maybe by the size of the apple, the genetically okay. modified one may be bigger depending yeah. on what you were doing on the gene. Yeah. It may look much more red than the natural one, right?
Those okay.
type of things. It could be tastier than the natural one. Ooh. Because then we've played around with the gene, right?
Ooh. Or
with modified the gene to suit whatever we are trying to attain. And like I mentioned, that you can, even from a nutritional point of view, you can then add more nutrients or make it more nutritious than it would inherently be. So it's all about that. But when you look at it, it's just an apple. An apple is an apple. And then if you put it, let's say if we store these two apples in yeah. the fridge, the natural apple will then rot faster than the genetically modified. Because this one, we've modified the genes such that it can last longer.
Ah, love it, love it. And again, I'm going to digress here, Doc, because when we go and buy these things, right, we see this big apple right there. When this one is the right one, this one. You know, we judge based on the size, we judge based on, I suppose, the color. And it seems like most of the time we even get it wrong because we think the bigger is the organic and it's actually the opposite. like in Jeguning at the same time. Eh?
Yes.
Yeah. That's an interesting one right there. Okay. I want us to end this particular one before we get into the World Hunger one, right? It's not a fair characterization if I'm hearing you, Doc, to say all genetically modified foods are all bad or all good. So is that I suppose they are not all bad and they're not all good at the same time.
So I would say maybe not all good from a point of view of who was manufacturing it.
Yeah,
did they
yeah.
follow the regulations?
Okay.
Because regulations are actually there, they're in place.
Yeah.
If you are a player in the food sector, you
yeah.
must follow, and they are gazetted by the government. So
yeah.
departments such as Department of Health, Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development,
yeah.
Or Forestry and Fisheries and the likes. Those are the people who gazette those documents. But before you even have the legislation, there's academia involved, there's the industry involved, there's even the general public that is involved, because then you will be informed as a general public to say, we have this legislation, it's out for comments. You can actually read the whole thing and
yeah.
say if you agree or you disagree with
yeah.
with the thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Now let's get into, I suppose, the issue of world hunger and the problems that we face from that end. And so, are we genetically modifying food as a result of the fact that there's world hunger? Or maybe would you say it's a bit of corporate and, you know, financial greed that a corporate is trying to, you know, take advantage of this world hunger?
No, we actually have a problem in Africa or even in the world, right, when it comes to food, the supply of food products. Like I'm saying, if we are relying on exporting, let's say, a certain type of fruit, if we are just going to be exporting it to other countries where they need those nutrients from that fruit, and we only have to wait for the natural season, then we are going to suffer even more. Let's say in South Africa, that's the business perspective of it. But also, there's people in the world and people need to eat food. And if, let's say, you are in, we are manufacturing food in Africa and they are hungry in America and we want to give them food, we are trying to assist them. If it's not genetically modified and we have the food has to travel either by ship, right, where we has to go to the depot and then from there, by the time it gets there, it would be rotten. So are we going to help solve their hunger problems? We won't, right? So it's all about that. And also there's also issues of climate change. I'm sure you've heard the word global warming at some point, right? We even had a real case of the effects of global warming here. Remember the, was it the 1st of September or early September when we had snow in summer? So you want your crops to be resistant to such things. Or sometimes there's drought, right? And if you haven't modified your organisms, then it means we are going to die of hunger in that year because now our plants couldn't withstand those harsh conditions. So it's about that. So it is done to actually ensure that we have food, which then attaches even to your sustainable development goals. I mean, there's 14 of them, and number one is actually, let's start with the second one. It says zero hunger, right? So we want that to have zero hunger. The first three are the most important. They speak to what we are talking about. There's the zero hunger, which is a sustainable development goal number two. There's number one, which is no poverty. And also there's number three, which speaks to good health and well-being, which then ties to the whole GMO story that we are talking about. Because if we want to export products to other countries for us to not have poverty or for us to be able to trade, then there is an element of that genetically modifying your food products, but also understanding the legislations that would then need to be adhered to from a South African point of view and from the point of view of where you are exporting the food products to. So, for example, if in South Africa we are supposed to state that maybe there is, when there's 5% GMO in the product, we need to say this is a genetically modified organism. If in Australia you state when there's 1%, then it means when you modify these organisms, you would then need to adhere to that regulation. Otherwise, they cannot take the product from you. They won't purchase you, which then kills the flow of trade,
Sure. Now, here's the thing, Doc, because most people would argue that Africa is self-sufficient, right? In other words, we do have food in Africa. We've got the land. We've got arable land, for that matter, much better than, say, the West. We've got favorable weather conditions that allow for us to be able to build food security for ourselves. Some have even argued that it's perhaps governments malfunctioning, and, we've got fights in Africa, we've got coups in Africa, we've got instability, political and otherwise, and that's what makes us a little bit food insecure. Will that be fair for people who say that, or they really don't get the problem that we have in terms of food insecurity?
No, it's 100%. We do have land, but are we using the land to plant food? Does the food grow properly also with now the climate changes that are happening? I know there was a joke running around, right, with the whole snow thing, that maybe government in Limpopo ate the funds for the snow. That's why they couldn't get it. But in all reality, nobody is in control of what happens with the climate. So we could be having land, but are we going to blame the government if there's now drought or there's now harsh weather conditions? It's a joint effort from all of us that would then lead us to to those instabilities, you know. And then I'm not going to talk about the political instabilities, because those are really there. They are a true reality. We have them. But are we always going to blame everything on government, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like we could be having land. We do have land.
Yeah.
But are we proactive enough to plant, or do we just have empty land that we are not even using to plant food products?
Yeah.
And also, when we talk about farming, is it subsistence farming where my grandmother in KZN could have a huge plot of land where she plants for us as her family and the neighboring community? But if I stay in Sandton, or I stay in Midrand, or even Alexandra, where am I going to plant all of this food that we are supposed to consume? So I think that's where the issue lies.
Yeah, 16 million people apparently just in Gauteng. And the biggest populace, I suppose, in comparison to all other provinces of the world. And we don't have the land. Like, where are these 16 million people going? Because there's no land here in Gauteng, but all of us are here. And I suppose that's why the issue of insecurity then becomes heightened, because who's feeding these 16 million people that are here who don't even have the land to plant anything, for that matter? So,
or even to stay in, for that matter.
Exactly.
We have a housing situation or challenge, for that matter, let alone the food one.
Yeah, no, we need to have these conversations, because, wow, I think we must, if there's a way to distribute, and I know distribute sounds like people are commodities, but they are not. But we need to find a way to balance things out, because, wow. In fact, someone has argued to another dog, because I've got a colleague who works in this kind of things of, you know, done, I think, a BA humanities and such things they get taught, you know. We can fit the rest of the world in Africa. They can all just jump into any part of Africa, and we'll still have land enough to, you know, accommodate everyone else. So I was like, is that true? If that is true, that would be interesting in terms of politics. But that's me digressing, thinking about the issue of, we need to find a way, I suppose, as Africa, to say we have the land, but we are not optimally using the land as we should be, right? And we need to find sustainable ways of using the land, so that we can create some or other level of superior food security for ourselves. Now, let's get into then the issue of ethics. When modifying food, what are we talking about then? What are some of the important ones to look out for?
Okay, so when it comes to ethics, obviously, as food scientists, there's always a code of conduct that you have to follow, right? When you are modifying the food, so you are not going to be now introducing a gene that is going to make us sick as people, because then you are not being ethical. And also the disclosing of how much of the GMOs are there, or if they are there, so that I get to make an informed decision as the consumer as to whether I want to consume the product or not, you know. I think that's where the ethics would then come in, right? So, like I said, depending on where you are standing in the whole thing, somebody else will say, no, it's not ethical. Why are you doing that to the poor apple? Because it cannot speak to itself for itself. Now you're modifying its genes. And maybe you would want to deem us as selfish.
Yeah.
But somebody can come then as from a religious point of view and say, maybe we've been given dominion over plants and animals, you know. So I think that's where it becomes a catch-22, and that's where most of the arguments would then come from, like, pests deserve to live. So, and then I will also say, so must I plant something for the pests to devour my food, you know, as a farmer? Yeah, but I think if everything is just done in modification or moderation, and also if everything is done and you disclose the information, and that's why even with research, you first have to do it in the laboratory, see what you're doing, and then from there, that's it. You will even get, you need ethical clearance to even use an animal to do research for it to feed on whatever you have genetically modified, for you to see what the effects would be before you even get ethical clearance for human beings to participate on your study. So by the time it gets to human beings, it has been trialed and tested so many times, right? But also what I've seen with GMOs, maybe for the small farmers, we would say that it doesn't give a plain level field to compete, because where is the small farmer going to get all of this information to genetically modify the food product, meaning their produce is always going to be smaller than the produce of a big corporate organization, right? So it's all about that. And maybe that farmer would then depend on buying seeds from this big farmer, you know, all the time. And maybe that's where we then need to practice ethics and be fair to say, if you have this information, are you going to patent it? And you become the only person who can modify those genes, or is it going to be knowledge that you can share and even train upcoming farmers so that they also get to trade with you, and then it becomes a fair trade type of a thing?
Are these equipments that are used to modify food expensive?
Yes, research is expensive, right? Any sort of research is expensive because you can imagine you first need a laboratory to do that. You need a science, meaning you need somebody who's educated, who will understand what are genes, how does it, how does DNA look like, how does RNA look like. So there's money that has to be involved in that, educating that person. You need the facility to then do your research. You will need your consumables, which are your raw materials and chemicals that you would then use to in the lab to try and understand what would happen if somebody consumes this. Then you will need to buy the animals that you will be using, whether it's rats or pigs, that you would then use for your research. From there, you will also need money, maybe in some instances, for people to then participate in maybe the sensory evaluation, or you need to train, could be trained panelists, right, who, if you are looking at maybe just improving the nutritional content, maybe how the product looks like and those type of things. So you'd need someone who's going to be able to say, this is the type of red that I would expect from an apple. So it does look like what it should be. And that person needs to be an educated person in that sense. So I think if I'm just a small farmer and I'm not equipped to have such, then it becomes a problem. But I can assure you that departments like the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform, they actually do have training courses on a whole lot of things for agricultural even in their websites. Yes, they even take people to other countries to learn about agricultural activities or things that they do, and then they can bring in the information they cite, and usually they target small farmers.
That's really amazing. Okay, as we round it up then, let's get to the crux of this conversation, which is, does this genetically modifying food process and all that the solution to world hunger, in your opinion?
I honestly think it is. Looking at what is happening with global warming, we need plants or even animals that are going to be resistant to the drought that is happening around us. So for me, it is an answer. And I know that for somebody else, they can say, no, they are not for the genetically modified organisms. You know? So I think it becomes one of those where we will be split in between. Because even if you can, let's say, go to media such as YouTube and you talk about genetically modified organisms, you'll even see protests in certain countries where people are protesting against these genetically modified organisms, and they state their reasons as to why they are not for them, you know. And I think if it makes sense to you and it's valid to you, I'm not going to invalidate that. But from my point of view, I think they are not the sole answer, but they are part of the answer to us having food, or having food security, or rather preventing food insecurities.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. What would be your final thoughts on this one, genetically modified food and world hunger, as we round it up?
Okay. I would say that we as people, maybe South Africans, since we are based in South Africa, we need to be informed before we start saying we are for or against food products or a certain technology or, you know, that type of a thing. Yeah. Get the information, be well-vested, listen to shows like this, because you guys are always bringing in people who speak about this technology, and then get well-informed and then go an extra mile also to then, you know, try to understand from a broader point of view. Yeah. Like I'm saying, even if you can go to the
YouTube,
you can even go to the what we call FAO, or the World Health Organization. There's always short courses about food things, so you can, and they're free. You can always participate in those type of things. And tomorrow is actually also World Food Day, right? On the 16th of October, right? Where we celebrate about food. So I think people should just be vested in these things, try to learn as much as possible, and maybe you will even change your mind and realize that GMOs are not that bad or as bad as you think they may be.
Love it. Thank you so much, Doc. Kosikbusis. Thank you so much. That was our doc there talking to us this evening. World in food insecurity and world hunger there. Where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line is what we are talking about today. But thank you so much to Udokotela Umini Khoza there. Really, really loved that conversation.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.